Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to the Terra Sales Podcast. Yay, my goodness. Today, I'm really excited to chat with my good friend, Chris Carr. I haven't seen her in, gosh, I don't know how long, years. And so much has happened with her that she is sharing in her new book, I'm Not a Morning Person. How cool is that title? This is a book about grief, about loss, about strategies to help you feel and help you move through life. So I'm interested, of course, for my own personal reasons in losing my dad earlier this year and everything that my family has been through with caring for him, supporting my mom, lots of things going on with that, my goodness. So I'm interested in her strategies and tools and all of those things. And really, I'm most interested in connecting with an old friend, in hearing her stories, her growth, her change, her transformation. She has been through herself so much in her lifetime and has also had the energy to share with the world so much of her learnings and her growth as well. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with the epic Chris Carr, and I'll see you on the other side. First of all, like the title, geez, my genius friend. I'm like, oops, she did it again with the title.
I'll tell you, my editor, not at Hay House, outside editor, she said that's either the dumbest title I've ever heard or it's brilliant. And I was like, oh, okay. Let's go with brilliant and yeah. Let's give it a try.
Oh, it's perfect. I mean, because I don't know. I mean, you're funny and everything's, you know, it's, I think that's one of the reasons why we all love you, because you move through things with, you know, the humor that you have, and it brings out the ability to realize that we all can be funny, even in like all these awful moments. So I yeah. think it's brilliant. Oh, brilliant.
Hey, I'll take that. I'll take that. You know, it for me, humor is part of how the medicine goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And finding the light moments in the darkness, in the tragedy, in the heartbreak allows us to stay in them and navigate them in a healthy way, because we know the way out is through. And so humor helps me do that. And this is also true. I was not a morning person, meaning like it was the one emotion I didn't want to touch. Yeah. And you're a wellness teacher. You've been doing it for decades and decades, and people think you have the answers, and sometimes you think you have the answers. Mm. But this was a hole in my education, because I had deep resistance, and it wasn't until the rug got pulled out from under me again that I decided to stop running, literally, and do this exploration. And that's really how it came.
Wow. That's cool. Okay. So I'm almost finished. I told everybody to leave me alone because I want to read the whole thing. And it was, you know, I wanted to, but then I really just physically had to. Like, you can't put it down, which I think it's you. I mean, you're so easy to read. And I love how you address your own grief from your own humongous life story with your own diagnosis, and how we all kind of run away. I mean, like, you've known me through like so many embarrassing changes in my own life. And I think your book really so far for me has, I picked it up thinking this is going to help me with my dad. And I'm going through it thinking, well, crap, this is helping me say, what the heck? So many things, and there's so much to move through and it's okay. And to go there with sort of all of it. And you offer the tools too, which is freaking cool. You're like, wait a minute. Okay, now take a breath. Now create an altar. You know, so you make it easy to do some things that help. So did that happen to you when you know, you're saying the rug got pulled out? You know, did you, and I love how you say in the book too, like the wellness tools kind of went away, but obviously you found, was it through time or just through something else to put them back in or put different ones back in? Or
it was through excruciating pain, you know? So I feel like what happens is we wake up, we gather our tools and then we use them and we go back to sleep and then we wake up and we rinse and repeat. And hopefully this, as we continue to be human beings, we shorten the amount of time from waking up and going to sleep. But all of that is super, very natural. And I held myself to such a high standard. And when I didn't achieve that standard, whatever that was, I would abandon myself because that's what I was taught. And that was my original wound as somebody who didn't know her father and had an absent father who didn't want to be a part of my life. That was my original wound. So that's what I would go back to because that's what I was taught. And so it's not until you say, this doesn't feel good and I have to stand for myself and I have to love myself the way I encourage other people to love themselves, that I was able to start to thaw back into some of my self-care practices, but in a totally different way, with so much more kindness and patience and compassion. And I would say to myself, set the bar so low that you trip over it and concuss yourself. You know what I mean? Like, set the bar that low. Don't be Chris Carr, the wellness warrior. She is not useful here. And a lot of the work that you do, you know, I would practice yoga because it felt good. I would practice yoga because it, you know, would help my mental health. I would practice yoga because my thighs look better when I did. Like, I'm just going to be honest, you know, there was like selfish reasons or not, you know, like ego reasons. But it wasn't until I went through this deep period of loss and grief and the past traumas that were coming up as a result of that, that I realized that whenever I lose my mind, so to speak, the way back in is through my body. And like the practices that you teach took on a whole other layer of meaning, but also need and almost like a different sort of medication, so to speak, because I was really, it felt like I was sick and suffering. And so, yeah, I don't know if that answers your questions, but the tools were always there. I just used them in a different way and came back to them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love talking with you and just getting together with people through, you know, the decades. And it feels like whatever the tools are, I mean, with me, it's, I hear a lot more about yoga and ease and softness and stuff, and people, including myself, completely change. And obviously you've changed when, like you say, like the shit hits the fan and you have to. And I've noticed since this happened with my dad in-person events, I used to want to preserve my energy and show up and then perform and then come back. And now I'm like, can we please just talk and be together? And yes, we're going to do the yoga things, but at lunch, can I sit next to you? And can I tell you some stuff going on with me? And can you tell me some stuff going on with you? And that kind of layer just became so much more part of it, the connection piece. And the, like you said, you're taking off the Chris Carr, the wellness guru that we all know and love you as, and you're becoming Chris Carr, the person who knows all of this amazing stuff, but is also a human going through it. So is that similar?
Oh, 100%. I'm so deeply back into student mode and sharing my experience and my stories and what's helped me from that posture. And it's a lot more enjoyable for me as a teacher, to be in like my own messy humanity. And I think it makes the experience of teaching a lot richer as well. And the truth is like, we're all going through similar things. And I think this epidemic of loneliness that we're experiencing right now that only seems to be increasing, partly due to technology and our isolation and separateness, but also from tribalism and the polarization of all of our politics and culture and society. But this epidemic of loneliness, I think we can start to chip away at it by being in true connection. And maybe that isn't always live and in person, but it is saying, I'm going to show up as me and I'm going to share what I am going through. And like, for example, when somebody asks me how I am, I might not say, great, how are you? You know, I might say, actually, I'm going through a rough time right now. Thanks for asking. And I don't have to dump all my stuff on the person, but it's those moments of real interaction that I think more and more of us are craving. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, it's also where more and more of us are awkward to sort of attempt those connections or feel like we even have permission to, or it's even appropriate, because we're so lost in that paradigm of loneliness and isolation and separation.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I noticed that the first in-person thing we did coming back, it was great. We were all just hugging all of the time, but it was sort of like the hug never ended. We're like, okay, we have to go eat lunch. We have to go do yoga again. But yeah, that craving was there and still is there for me. I mean, even you being nearby in proximity to me, I'm like, when can we hang out? Can we do a smile? Exactly. What's going on? I'm like, I chill, Tara.
What are you doing?
Chris will call you when she's ready. You know?
But I just want to walk trails with you forever and catch up. Like, it's been 10 years. Tell me every single thing that's happened.
Oh, there's one. Okay, so many things, but I think a lot of people relate to this too. I definitely related to this so much. And I didn't realize that I was doing essentially not the wrong thing, but kind of the wrong thing. But when you talk about with your dad and how your mom was such a boss handling everything with the spreadsheets and stuff, but how you went into like project mode, I did the same thing. I'm like, I'm calling in all my famous friends to fix you. You know, we're going to do the swab test. We're going to do the stuff that I won't do for myself, but I'm going to fix you and supplements and all the things. So, and I know that if you went through that and I went through that, you know, everybody's going through this. How can we fix this loved one that we know is not fixable? And how did you sort of, I mean, I love that you shared that your dad was sort of telling you like, no, I can't do those things right now, or it doesn't feel good, or I'm tired or whatever. But how did that feel for you? And what was that like? Because I know there's so much for me to learn in that, and hopefully everybody else too.
and myself as well. So taking a step back, the book is really like its stories and observations and tips about what to potentially expect when you're not expecting your life to fall apart. And the central theme is around loss and grief, because when our lives fall apart, we experience a lot of loss and a lot of grief. And so one of the central stories throughout the book is my dad being diagnosed and me coming on my 20-year cancerversary and the global pandemic and all these things that were happening at the same time. My business was struggling a bit. And that moment where you decide, okay, I have to face these things instead of running, like we were talking about. And those stories are woven throughout. But this particular story that you're talking about was I was going into the hospital with my dad, and we had the obligatory meeting with the hospital nutritionist. And of course, I'm thinking this hospital nutritionist doesn't know what I know, you know what I mean? And I've got all my judgment and all the stuff. And she walks in the room and she looks at me and she goes, well, you're Chris Carr? And I was like, mm-hmm. And she said, oh, don't worry, just do exactly what she tells you to do. And now, of course, in that moment, I'm like, yeah, exactly. Do exactly what I tell you to do, because I'm going to fix you, because I can't lose you, right? You're my mentor. You're one of the most important people to me. You're not going anywhere. Just do what I fucking say. Mm-hmm. Like, because where am I? I'm in fear. I'm in anxiety. And so I go to a place of control. Mm. And I wanted to control everything. But people aren't projects. And that is what that story is about, because I talk about when I was newly diagnosed and I went vegan, and you know, at that point 20 years ago, I was macrobiotic, and my parents are trying to figure out how the hell to make a macrobiotic Thanksgiving, and it's not easy and it tastes disgusting. Like, no offense to the macrobiotics out there, but, and then the turkey comes out for them. And I decide to give a talk on the intersection of the environment and animal rights and health and well-being. And nobody fucking wants to hear that. And I'm on my soapbox and my dad says, hey, basically, people aren't projects. I know this means so much to you and we're on board. Maybe not all the way, but we're on board. But like, if you want your message to go far, you have to meet people where they are. And that was very impactful to me 20 years ago and was very helpful in the way I approached writing Crazy Sexy Diet. It wasn't, it was welcoming. But here I am, X number of years later, going back to that place of I know best. And he's going through chemo, he's going through radiation, he's got a very aggressive disease. All of the things, all the supplements, all I did exactly what you did. I called all of the people, colleagues, you know, I'm putting together the team, the plan. And he wasn't up for it, not just mentally, but physically was not up for it. And I think it was his sharing of that and me and reminding myself that I'm doing old habits and behaving in a certain way because I'm so scared and I'm being led by my anxiety, that I had to look at that and say, like, I don't know how long I have with this person. So if there's one healing power, I know it's love. You know, if he's not going to have a smoothie and eat 87 supplements with it, like, get out of the way and can you show up with love? And from that moment on, it was like only love in the room. The intention is love. The intention is connection. This is the medicine. This is the healing path we're on. Everything else needs to fall away.
Yeah, I got there too from this, from my dad telling me to stop. Sort of like only when you're told. And, you know, I think we have a similar relationship with our dads, that sort of healthy, like, sit out, you know, like, I respect you, you're nice, you're awesome, you care for me. But when you tell me no, like, okay, fine, you know, so that's hard to hear. Yeah, it's hard to hear. But you're right. I mean, that changed me. I mean, that changed, I it sounds like you've just, I mean, I know you change and grow and you're so smart and you've taught me how to do everything I know. And you sent me a freaking juicer when I was like 20, whatever. And like, you know, just set my life on this amazing path. But it sounds like in the last, you know, several years of all this happening, there's been this sort of accelerated change. And is that true? Or is that something that's kind of, you know, just been happening through all the other work that you've been doing? Or is this kind of a big, like, wow, this is big now?
This was it. This was accelerated change, I think. I mean, I think it was always, I don't know if you feel this way, it's always knocking at our door, right? We get whispers, we get taps, sometimes we get punched in the face, like, especially if we ignore them, you know?
Yeah.
So it was coming, but this was like lock and load, you know, fasten your seatbelt. You can scream and shout and claw and fight, but this is what's happening. So you might as well get on board. I don't think that any of this would be deep in my marrow if I hadn't gone through that experience. And I imagine that you probably share that feeling with losing your dad and everything that you went through.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, also it's kind of interesting I know you're so smart and you're such a kind of fast learner to heal yourself. And that's something I really loved about reading your book. You're like, okay, here's the trauma guy, here's the trauma woman, here's this story, here's that story. And were those things that you were piecing together during this time? I mean, I was kind of searching for all that stuff too. Or is this like, how did that all come together? I mean, now you've wrapped it up in this nice wreath, really. This is like beautiful, you know, wreath on the cover of, you know, your stories, but also this real, it's a real help book, you know, it's a you help book. So how did you sort of find all of these teachings and kind of figure out how they help us all?
Well, it's like that saying, when the student is ready, the teachers appear. I was in agony So I crawled back to therapy. Like, I was really like, am I done with this already? I want to put my money elsewhere,
yeah.
You know? But I crawled back to therapy and went back into that student posture and realized that I really needed support because I didn't know how to navigate this. And so that's when I started to piece together some new tools that I write about, but also relying on some of the older tools that we all know and use, but sometimes we forget we even have them, or we hold ourselves to such a high standard. As I was talking about before, that we say, like, why even bother using them? But then when I decided to write this book, it was also like, okay, these were the things that I was using, but you know, when you're writing a book, you're doing deep research. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote this book first and foremost for myself. And I knew that there were other people out there like me who were terrified of these topics and kind of felt helpless. And I wanted to create hope and resources for us. But the book took 3 years to write, too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and 17 drafts.
Wow.
I mean, the first draft was like a big diary entry of drivel. Like, you don't want to even read it. You know what I mean? It was just diarrhea. It was just bam. So it shaped over time. And I think that the creative process for me is, it's not only shaping the work, but it's kind of shaping me.
Mm.
So it was a beautiful relationship that I had with the book.
That's cool. You can really tell. I mean, you've multiple New York Times bestselling books. Like, I've seen you kind of really amped up and crushing it with all of your book, every book you do, everything you do, and you're doing that with this. But it feels, I mean, just from a distance, knowing you as a friend, and also like knowing you as my, you know, superstar I look up to, like, it feels really different in a really cool way. Does it feel different for you, this book, like having it in the world now, and, you know, doing all of your press and the stuff that you do all the time, and you're used to it and you're great at, you know, I feel like with you could just push play and put you on the news and you just speak and everything makes sense and you're like, here's the book, and everybody's like, yay. But does any of this process feel different for you?
Very much so. Very different. I mean, if I'm to be honest with you, that some of my previous successes, even though I completely believe in the work and the message of all the things that, you know, I've written about, there was still a lot of ego involved. And, you know, there's still the drive for a certain amount of accolades and whatnot. And with this book, you know, I'll share this with your community. I just found out I didn't make the bestseller list. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't my intention to make the bestseller list. And I know that people around me were a little like scared and nervous, like how I would take it, you know? And I think it says a lot about this book, for me, not to the outside world, but to me, because it is not about anybody else saying you've made it.
Mm.
It is literally about saying, this is my offering to you. And my hope is that I can bring this to as many people who need it as possible over time. Because it's the kind of book that at first you go and you look at and you go, I don't know if I want that. Right. And I knew I was getting myself into that, even touching this topic. And so I think that this book is the book that, like, people give to other people.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a whole other hope for this book. And it has nothing to do with what it will give me, because it's given me everything I need.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I've already done that. I mean, I bought some copies and I'm passing them out. I mean, it is that, because it's sort of just a way to connect and heal yourself too. I mean, when you have I mean, it's not only losing a dad or a parent, but, you know, this, how you explored grief is so wide and sort of inclusive. I know that sounds maybe weird to say, but, you know, it's helped me look at other areas of my life and be like, oh shit, there's grief there. So this is those books. And I've even had, you know, friends in our yoga community that are like, oh, it's really hard for me to read. Or I'm like, oh, she does the audiobook. Like, her voice is amazing. And that's so cool that you have mm-hmm. that. So I'm like, give me your whatever account you have. I'll, you know, put it in there. So I think giving this book to somebody isn't just like dropping it off because you've read it. It's such a way to connect. So I do feel like that's, you know, I mean, it seems almost like this spiritual thing of like, I'm sure you've had, I want to ask you too, if you've had like weird experiences, but like your dad kind of, you know, winking and showing up in all of these just random places. So I feel like my dad and your dad are kind of hanging out a little bit with this book. So thanks for that.
I would love that. I want that to be true.
But have you had, I mean, I love how you talk about too, like you are a sort of part-time atheist and all of these things, but have you had, you know, and I love that you said, what was his mantra at the end about it's okay? And it's just something beautiful that he was repeating, but did you have in connection with him or just, you know, maybe after he passed or during that time, like spooky experiences of like, you know, I mean, maybe some of this is like, just like you say, like hypervigilance or being overtired or just, you know, nervous system on eggs or whatever it is. But, you know, like, I just think I've talked to a few like near death experience people since my dad died. And it's like, I feel like I'm kind of like, you're like, what's going on? But it's more interesting of, you know, if you're comfortable sharing, but no pressure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I love that. It's funny because I've done a lot of interviews, as I shared with you, and I always stumble around the faith portion of any interview, which is kind of funny. Like, it just shows me a deeper place for me to explore for myself. But yeah, I use humor a lot. So I said in one section, I said, I'm a part-time atheist, mostly on Sundays. But there are no atheists in foxholes, right? And I consider myself more agnostic. So I'm very, very open to the mystery and I'm very inspired and curious about it. And I am tickled at the idea that when I pass, I'm going to get some answers to my questions, perhaps. But I also don't necessarily feel that I need the answers now in order to live a peaceful, connected, contented life.
Nice.
And sometimes when I've been in the place of searching for faith, I'm feeling really down on myself if I didn't have like what other people have, when I know spiritual teachers are just like so lit up and so sure. And I remember my grandfather actually was agnostic as well. He said, I've never known the quiet comfort of God. And I would long for that quiet comfort, but there was a part of me, like I couldn't force myself to be 100% on board. And so I was really tough on myself. And then I just said, well, what if you just like backed off that energy? You know, it's not getting you anywhere, you know? And believing in the idea that love never dies, because love is energy and energy doesn't die, it transforms. And so staying connected to that. So going back to do I believe in the afterlife or do I believe that my dad is still there in some energetic form? I choose to believe that because it gives me comfort. I choose to entertain that because it gives me comfort. I like being in relationship. And I have tons of friends who are mediums who want to give me messages all the time. Sure. And like when they give them to me, I'm like, yeah, it kind of sounds like him. You know, and that feels good. But I have had signs too. And so I think it's just coming from that place of keeping our hearts open to what could be. And I don't have to assign any kind of value or definitiveness to it. But I can tell you like a couple little stories of signs. You know, I was The first one I got was on Valentine's Day, and he died on February 11th. And my diagnosis anniversary is Valentine's Day every year. And this was my 20 year. So my mother and I are walking on the beach, and I'm just devastated. We're both like just ghosts, you know, walking. And he would have always given me roses. He's always given me roses on Valentine's Day. How's my Valentine doing? And my husband gave me red roses, and he was going to give them to my mom, because of course he would get my mom red roses. It was just our thing. And my husband was like, oh God, what do I do? Should I get her roses too? It feels weird. Is that awkward? Does that make her think of him? And he was so in a bind about it. And I said, look, if this is so hard and it's troubling you so much, they're not yours to give. Just let it go. It's okay. You know, like, let's just be present with her. And I'm going to go on this beach walk, and we'll do something later. I don't know what that is, but we'll do something. So we go out on the beach, and we're walking. And then all of a sudden, I see these two red roses standing at attention, like flapping like this. And we run to the roses, and we're spending time with the roses. And I'm like, oh my God, look, it's dad. And we grab the roses, and we bring them back. We're crying, we're laughing, we're hopeful. And we get back to our car at the parking lot, and I look up and I see this guy watching a TV show, and it's coming on the title card, and it says Surviving Death.
Right? Wow.
And I have countless stories like this. Wow. And so what I said in that portion of the book, which is like Beyond the Stars, is can we turn our lives into treasure hunts? You know, oftentimes we see absence. We see the absence of the person no longer sitting in their chair, or at the holiday dinner, or the clothes on the hanger. We see the absence, which is easier to see, right? Mm-hmm. But when we shift and we start to look for presence, and we turn our life into that treasure hunt, that is one of the ways I think we continue the relationship in a different energetic form. And I see his presence all over the place when I shift what I'm looking for.
Oh, I mean, that's just so rad.
Isn't that rad? I love you. That's rad.
Rad. I mean, yeah, that's just... I mean, yeah, the whole thing. I mean, the two roses, amazing. And then the TV thing, come on. It's like, just in case you didn't get it, girl.
Seriously. And so it's beautiful that way. You know, it's we can continue.
Oh, that's rad. Oh my gosh. Okay, there's so many things I want to ask you. And I know people in our community are going to want to ask you this, because you're, you know, you've done so much, you're doing so much, all these things, everybody's stressed, everybody wants to do, everybody wants to achieve, but it's, there's a bunch of questions there. And I think you've been my hero since you really welcomed me into your life so graciously and introduced me to all my friends, of teaching me how to basically use what I need, do what I need, and rest what I don't, like this principle of conservation of energy. And it's something I continually think of you whenever I'm trying to figure out what the heck to do with my work, with my family, with my time, all of it. So you're the boss of that. You've always been. But I want to ask you, has that changed for you since everything has happened in the last several years? And for folks trying to sort of get to that next phase of wanting to feel calm and connected, and like they're living their purpose, like they're living a meaningful life, whether that's through a big career or just comfort in their family, or just how do we get to the place where you wake up and you say, okay, I feel good about my life. I feel like I'm living my purpose and doing the right things. And I know you have so much wisdom there.
Well, I look at you and you're a mentor for me in many ways. And that is one of the ways, because I feel a sense of flow and connection and contentment in you that transmutes. And we can have those, we can have that energy, even though we don't always necessarily feel that way about ourselves. Right. But one of the things that I've always resonated with you specifically is, like, I remember reading Rebel Yogi, you know, and I was like, I love that. Who is she? I want to be her friend, right? Because what that that symbolizes in me is this idea of going your own way and walking your own path and letting your path be enough and what you stay anchored to. And so I reflect that right back to you, because it's easy, especially as you get more attention on you, to stray off your path, right? I can say I have many times. And so one of the sections that I talk about in the book is, like, I love to weave in some advice from my dad throughout. And one of the moments that I found to be so dear and so useful for all of us is this idea to make your golden years now. Because oftentimes we put them off, we wait, we say, once the kids are here, or I'm done with this project, or we get to a certain amount of revenue, then we'll blah, 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 blah. And he had done some of that, just like we all do, because we're human beings. And then he's diagnosed with a terminal illness. And it was beautiful to see that in the 4.5 years of his life, he did make so many golden moments. And I realized it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. But he would say to me, like, we were at this beautiful dinner for him for his birthday, and we were doing something he never would have allowed himself to do because it was the summer and that was his busy season for his work. And here we are doing the thing he never would have allowed himself to do. And he said, I wish I had given myself more like this. And so when you weave those two things together and you say, like, how can I make my life more golden now? And what is my more like this? I think it helps us kind of prune out what isn't. And it's hard to know what you're a yes for when you refuse to confront what you're a no for. And I think that that's probably where that's the biggest work that I'm doing right now for myself, as a person, but also as a business owner. Because when we say, like, what is my more like this? What are those moments that I want more of? They start to leave clues for us. And you can only do that if you get still and you realize that the one other thing is like, there's this, I don't know if you relate to this, but, like, I remember hearing this saying, like, you can have it all, just not all at once. And at one point I found comfort in that, especially when I wasn't reaching certain milestones in my life. But now that saying, actually, I think is a lie. I think it does our health an injustice. And this is just my belief. So if anybody gets triggered by this, like, take the best, leave the rest, throw it out. But having it all is a lot of responsibility. It comes with a lot of maintenance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And fucking owner's manuals. And, like, leaks and breaks and, you know, water heaters.
Yeah.
And so, like, looking at what your all is and deciding how much you truly want. And when you decide what it is that you want, you're going all in, but not overextending yourself in a way where now you are a servant to your stuff. That's something I'm playing with right now. Like, if I were to build a life that I truly savor, as I continue to build a life that I savor, what does that look like?
I hear you. Yeah, for me, it's... you know, we have this app now, and our friends that have wellness businesses are like, okay, this is how you do ads. And, like, you got to do all these ads and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, if I do that, I have to be in meetings about ads. And I'm like, okay, so how do I make it sustainable and reach the goals? Like, can I ask our community members to, like, just do the ads, and maybe we can give them some commissions on what they sell? I'm like, can you do that? And I'm like, yes, you can do that. Okay, that sounds better to me right now. Like, maybe we'll do the ads next year, but I'm like, I just can't do the ads. So I learned from you so much on that. But yeah, I hear you that you're doing it again. But I think, at least for me and for so many people I Well, that not really, not very many people are on this path, because like you said, I think that the trick is the stuff. I mean, even in our wellness business, it's like, oh, look at all these things I'm doing, all these things I have because of how much I'm saving in the world. And it's, you know, it's, and we get, I get, you know, it's really easy to get caught up in it. And I know it's a lie, and I know I don't even want any of that stuff anyway. I want to feel good, and I want to, you know, have a roof over my head and like obviously some simple things. But yeah, you're so wise to share that sort of, you know, sustainable, I don't know what you would call it. Maybe that's the next book, like sustainable minimalism, you know, like Chris Carr, like how to actually do the thing you want to do without being an extremist or, you know, chained to this idea of who you think you should be, you know? So that's a major thing. So
it is. And it's, I think it's a push pull we all feel, like even if you don't own a wellness business like we both do, or a business in general, there's always this push pull between my private life and my my life out in the world and my business life or my job, and finding a way to find balance in those and making sure that you have enough of a life outside of what the world thinks you are. Because at the end, I think all we have is our memories and those moments that matter. And for me, it's just not about crushing another thing. It's actually, I love the word that you used at the top of our time together, which is softness. It took me a long time to figure out that people say, like, how are you so strong? How are you so strong? Where do you find the strength? And I find strength in the softness. The softness of how I care for myself, the softness of how I run my business. And believe me, I do not always run it soft, which lets me know, like, wow, you're just not in your own alignment right now. But basically redefining what strength and success is. You've helped me with that a lot. Definitely when I practice yoga with you, even though I'm not practicing it in person, I still have DVDs of yours, my friend. I can haul them out.
That's awesome.
I have DVDs from the early days. And I still have a DVD player.
Oh my gosh.
My team's like, grandma, you know, people stream things now.
Well, I've gotten better, so I'll give you the new stuff. We all improve, hopefully, right? I love it. Yeah, softness is the whole thing that I've learned from the healing arts, because it's like a real thing. Like, if you don't have softness physically and mentally, you're immovable. And if you can't move, you can't be moved emotionally, and you can't really do anything. And I feel like we've all been brainwashed that if you're soft, you're lazy, or that's for vacation. But you really got to be strong and tough and rigid if you're going to get anywhere. But really, like, the mechanics of it don't work like that. If you're soft and moving with ease and moving consistently, you get more. You get more, but you don't damage yourself as much in the process. Yeah. So
that is so wise. That is so darn true. And why does it take us so many kicks in the teeth to actually let that in?
Just does. It's hard. Oh my gosh. Okay. Can I do a quick round of like your five pillars of wellness? Because I feel like for folks that aren't subscribed to everything that you do, you make it so darn easy to use your website and to find everything and learn everything. But you're still doing the five pillars. They're in the book, right? I mean, they're like, this is the thing. Like, if you're like, how do I do wellness? What the heck is wellness? I mean, it's Chris Carr. Five pillars. How much did it annoy you when that woman was like, it's you? Were you secretly like, don't you know something I don't know? Can't you tell my dad something more?
Yeah. Anything you got there? Or is it, you know, I got to do this too. So this is lifestyle medicine. This is just, I think what I try to do is simplify things that we know have worked throughout space and time, you know? And when I was newly diagnosed and thought the shit just hit the fan, how am I going to take care of myself? I have no idea how to do this. I just stumbled, you know, like a zombie into a grocery store and was like, oh, hello, vegetables. I hate you. And I think I'm going to have to learn to like you. Great. You know, then you just become a student of what does it take to feel better? And for me, feeling better isn't having perfect health. It's not saying like, oh, I've overcome cancer or whatever your, if you're listening, particular challenge is. It's about saying, how do I feel better? Meaning, how do I have more energy? How do I have a little more vitality? How am I saying yes to life more than no to life? That to me is true health. Health is not the absence of disease. Health is the presence of vitality. So if we can put our compass towards the direction of vitality, we're doing a great job. And so with that, the pillars are being mindful about what you're eating, what you're drinking, what you're thinking, and how you're resting and renewing. And they sit on a foundation of stress management. So we know why, because stress creates inflammation in the body. This is basically an anti-inflammatory diet and lifestyle. And you can learn more about it, certainly in the book. But the one thing I will say is the key word that I just shared was mindful. It was not about being perfectionistic. It was not about setting the bar so high, as we talked about earlier, because I've been doing this for 20 years. And there have been times when I've just been like gung-ho all in. And that was driven by fear. But what I have seen is that's more sustainable for the vast majority of people is just like the little tiny habits and steps that you take on a regular basis that truly add up over time and add up to that vitality that we just talked about. And so I think anybody out there listening, let yourself off the hook and lower the bar, because if you start to do that, you're probably going to get further than you've ever gone.
Wow. Epic. Epic as always.
I love you.
Oh my gosh. I love you too. And it's all in this book. How wonderful. I'm not a morning person. I love it. Well, thanks so much for all your time and energy and wisdom and radness. I love you so much.
Thanks for having me, my friend.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with my friend Chris Carr. My goodness, I'm sure you could tell I did. I'm giddy over here, full of love and joy and thankfulness and softness. I'm really grateful that she took her energy into writing this incredible book. I'm not a morning person, so read it for yourself. You can get copies for friends that are going through any kind of grief or various people, stages of life, all kinds of thing. I really learned so much about grief in reading this book that it's not only about losing somebody, but it can be about transforming into a new part of yourself. So I'm not a morning person. I'm a huge, huge fan of Chris for so long and just so grateful for her work, grateful for her friendship and for what she puts into the world and really who she is. So if you want to practice softness with us anytime, we're pretty easy to find as well. You can practice along on the Strala Yoga app. You can start your 7-day free trial anytime. And if you need any extra help, don't feel shy to reach out. info@stralayoga.com, and we will get back to you, because that's what we do. Connect and share and be together. So I'm not a morning person by Chris Carr. Yes. Enjoy and see you soon. Thanks for listening and watching.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.